Case of the Frozen Pussy, Slip or Trip, The Million Dollar Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will find on the Miami Memoirs podcast. Strange Cases and Wild Tales presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of a creative Florida attorney reaching out over 60 years. There's more than meets the eye. In these sparkling memoirs, Florida attorney Louis Ress uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. Before we begin, I would like to tell you about a new book from Louis. Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Round 2 from the amazing life and times of legendary South Florida attorney Louis Ress takes readers from Brooklyn in the 1940s, via a spell in a top-secret army department, and a transatlantic solo flight in a replica Spirit of St. Louis, to adventures in and out of the courtroom in a sometimes rougher-than-ready 50s and 60s Miami. The book is available on Amazon, just search Louis Ress. And now let's begin.
Hi everyone, welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Louis Ress. I'm your host, Jeanette Garcia, and today we're doing episode 37, They Raised the Money. Louis, what's the story about They Raised the Money? Is it about a ransom payment?
No, it's not about a ransom payment. Believe it or not, it's about politics.
Oh.
Running for elective office, for political office. Here's the story. The Trumpets and the Goods were our very close friends. Ed Trumpet was a plastic surgeon, and Ray Good was an OBGYN. And we were at a dinner party at Pierre's Restaurant in North Miami in 1970. That's when it happened.
1970, huh?
A long time ago. But it's similar. You'll see the comparison. Things haven't changed that much. Ed Trumpet, Ray and Ellie Good, and Kenny Lustig, who was a neurosurgeon, and other friends were there. And one of the men, I know that it wasn't Ed or Ray Good, turned the conversation into a discussion of the domino theory and how the entire Southeast Asian area, including Singapore, would fall into communist hands unless we increased our commitment to winning the war in Vietnam. He leaned across the table and he pointed his finger at me, right on my chest, and he said, "It's like a row of dominoes." Then he said, "As one falls over and strikes the next domino down, they keep falling, one after another, one at a time. Southeast Asia will become communist, one country after the other."
Wow, I mean, that was pretty interesting. He must have been pretty smart to have seen that coming.
Well, he didn't see it coming, and he didn't come up with the theory. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you more about the domino theory. Mm-hmm. Is nothing new. He said, if we don't stop it in Vietnam, it'll never stop. So I didn't think it was an original thought. As a matter of fact, Henry Kissinger claimed to be the author of that concept. Hmm. But there may be others before Kissinger, and I think there were, and I'll tell you more about that. I must have had a few drinks because it started me off, and I raised my voice, and I looked around the table, and I said, "Gentlemen, ladies, do you know that we are losing tens of thousands of American lives, and even more young men are being terribly maimed in a battle that has been going on for over 15 years, which started as an effort to support the Diem regime, which was corrupt as hell."
Oh, that sounds like Afghanistan.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm going to compare it to Afghanistan when we're done, because it's very much like Afghanistan. Hmm. And the military advisors that we initially sent into Vietnam wound up as combat fighters. Then we got sucked into an internal battle between the Viet Cong and the South Vietnamese, which goes back to the French occupation. And Diem Bien Phu was a big battle that the French lost and left. And it goes beyond that. And I don't want my kids or your kids losing their lives for this nonsense. Not now. This is not our war. This is not a fight against the Nazis. We should get out and get out now.
That sounds like 1970, and we said it was the same thing now in 2021, huh?
Of course. That's just Afghanistan. Get out and get out now. The same thing. Wait till you hear the comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, that was me speaking, and there was dead silence. "Do you know," I continued, "that we have the biggest, the worst Republican war hawk representing us in Congress, and that the Democratic Party is not even planning on putting up even a token opponent? This guy, this congressman, wants to send more and more Americans to their deaths. He is politically supported by large corporations that make fortunes from wars.
That sounds familiar, too.
Yep, it does, and I'll tell you about the corporations that make money from wars. Anyhow, I went on. I said, this congressman is a friend of the sugar industry, which suppresses the research showing the terrible, unhealthy effects of sugar. And he doesn't concern himself with polluting the Everglades. And in those days, it was not like now. They didn't have any remedial legislation. And this congressman frequently goes to strip bars and drinks like a fish. And goes after the women working in the pole dancers. And he's in favor of mandatory criminal sentencing, which is a horrible thing. And he's in favor of a very punitive penal system. Wow. Well, it came pouring out. It came pouring out like a sermon. I was preaching, and I had the pulpit, and I kept pouring it on.
Wait, so before we move on, what's mandatory sentencing?
Mandatory sentencing. It's when they take the power away from the judge and compel the judge to give a minimum number of years or a minimum fine or punishment for if there's a conviction of that crime. So that if they say the sale of any amount of marijuana requires blank years in jail, the judge has no power, no authority to violate that. And that's a terrible, terrible, takes all discretion away from the courts. And the kid can't explain that he made a mistake, that he didn't understand that it's his first offense.
One kid I know
didn't have a traffic ticket. He got 10 years and we couldn't get him out.
Wow.
For nothing. And he was set up. He was set up by an agent do it. So sometimes, and this is what it is, if you have a small amount of drugs, you get an automatic minimum sentence, sometimes 10 years with no parole. And the federal judge has no discretionary authority. You can't go back and petition the judge. There's a case where the judge came out in the appeal and participated in the appeal of his own ruling, saying it was wrong, but he had to do it by virtue of the law.
Wow.
So, and that's amazing to me. So these are lifetime appointed judges, the federal judges, with terrific qualifications. And you're telling them, hey, stupid, we don't trust you to set a fair sentence. You have to stick to what we tell you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's crazy.
That's nuts.
So the jails are going to be overflowing. This is 1970 when I said this. I said the jails are going to be overflowing, and you're mixing in these minor offenders with hardened criminals to be both mentally and physically abused in an unfair system that knows no mercy but only to punish. And the rate of repeat offenders is already extremely high. It's going to get worse. This type of drug use is not criminal behavior any more than drinking booze during the Prohibition.
Yeah, and tell me about the prison system, too.
Well, it's vicious, and it's punitive, and it's antiquated, and it's puritanical. We don't do anything about rehabilitation the way they do in Europe. The Europeans are way, way, way ahead of us. It's a horror. You want to know what we do? Very little. The prisoners, when they come out of the prison, there's no adequate programs for them to integrate them back into society.
Yeah, they just get
so
dumped right out there.
They're pushed back into crime.
Yeah.
And so the recidivism is very high. That's the additional crimes. You ain't seen nothing yet. It's going to get worse and worse. This was 1970. I said, with a congressman like Burke, it's going to get worse. And the Democratic Party is sitting back doing nothing. Maybe because the 10th Congressional District, which was in Dade County, half in Dade County and half in the south part of Broward County, are two separate organizations in each county. And so the Democrats can't get together. Mm-hmm. I was on a roll. I was on a real roll.
What kind of a roll?
Well, it wasn't an edible roll. My next subject was pollution. I was going at him. What do you people know about pollution? You are brain surgeons, professors at the medical school, plastic surgeons, the intellectual elite, yet you know little, if anything, about pollution. This was 1970. Well, it's a scourge. Industry and your government have been polluting the hell out of this country, and no one does a thing about it. This is 1970, remember. This goes back to before the Industrial Revolution, when horse manure clogged the streets of our cities. Actually, it wasn't too bad. The horse manure wasn't that noxious. But the smell was terrible.
I bet.
After that, it was the soot and the fumes from coal burning. And I don't know if you remember the Pittsburgh and the coal industry. And it was shooting up poisons into the sky, into the air. And where it was going? To the Adirondack Mountains. And we had acid rain, and it knocked out all the fish and destroyed the lakes in the Adirondack Mountains.
It's terrible.
And no one does a thing about it. Acid rain was terrible, and auto exhausts are terrible, and the chemical discharge into our waterways is unbelievable, especially in places like Louisiana where there's no control, and they dump it into the Mississippi. It's awful.
Oh, goodness.
It's awful. Mining companies have mountains of noxious slag with toxic drainage ponds. They strip off an entire top of a hill, and they don't replace it. Well, sometimes your congressmen go along with it. Sometimes they've been bought.
Yeah.
They've been paid off by industrial polluters. How? There's 100 ways I can tell you how to legally bribe a congressman.
I want to hear about that later.
I'll tell you. And your present congressman is deeply indebted to the sugar barons who have funded his campaigns and are polluting Florida.
Oh, and you're saying that this is in 1970.
Right, but it hasn't changed.
It hasn't changed one bit.
We're in 2021 now,
yep.
And you're looking at a long time, and 50 years,
yeah.
And it hasn't changed. Congress has been bought and paid for, and nobody is fighting to clean up this country. And the military are terrible. They spill oil. They dump chemicals. They throw garbage overboard at sea. Who's going to stop them? The government isn't going to police itself or fine itself or require itself to restore the land or the water or the air. You will see more and more pollution until we get high rates of cancer and become so diseased that it will be cheaper to stop the pollution than to pay the medical bills it creates.
Boy, were you right. That's exactly where we're at now.
Right. I called the shot back there in 1970.
Yep.
I had their attention. I was like a runaway train. And they were listening and they weren't disagreeing. I kept going. I said, have you ever thought about the corruption that permeates our society? How can a politician accept a large sum of money from a business or a union and not give them a return on their investment? They don't do it out of the kindness of their hearts. Mm-hmm. They don't give you money because they love the world and they want to be good religious people. A congressman never stops running. There's an election every 2 years, and he or she spends their time raising money and seeking votes, and their duties in Congress take a back seat. They say, if I'm not elected, how can I serve? So they keep running for office and collecting money. The system is poor. Congressmen should have limits on what they can collect from any one source, and they should be elected for at least 4 years with a term limit of 2 terms or 8 years. Then it's time for new blood. Most of the congressmen try to make as much money as they can while they are serving. They legally get inside tips on the stock market.
Is that true?
Still true. Well, they passed a law against it, but they violated
it. Still probably happens.
It's amazing how the blind trusts have eyes in the back of their head.
Mm-hmm.
The congressman sits on a committee where he gets confidential information, you know, it's secret committee clearance. And the next day, his trust suddenly buys the stock in the company that is going to get the contract.
How convenient.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Their families have consulting firms, which is another way of getting kickbacks or bribes. If you want to get an appointment with the congressman, you go to the consulting firm, and they arrange for the appointment. And the same, especially in local politics, it's even worse.
Mm.
County governments
stuff.
Yeah. As soon as they're elected, they start to get vested retirement funds. Now it's 5 years, but in those days it vested immediately.
Wow.
And they had inexpensive health insurance. They got free haircuts and God knows what else. Well, the public pays through the nose. Any election funds which they accumulated and they didn't spend can be kept tax-free when they retire. Now, they stopped that. So this was the 70s. It was true until about 10 or 15 years ago when my congressman retired and he had $2 million in cash that he had collected in contributions for his campaigns that he never used. He took it home tax-free.
Huh.
But it was a limit, and then they expired, and you can't do that anymore.
Ah,
but for a while,
so
they were riding high. Then, when they retire, they go to work as lobbyists or consultants, dealing with their old friends in government in behalf of private interests.
So, what about working for foundations and think tanks or consulting firms or study groups or boards of directors, all that?
Oh, boy. You hit it. You hit it. And the boards of directors, I can tell you about former presidents being on boards of directors. That was the main income of one of them. I'll tell you about it later.
Wow.
Well, it was Jerry Ford, I can tell you. He was on like 7 boards. And yeah, get $100,000 from 7 different companies in those days. Jerry Ford goes back to the Nixon days.
That's
when he pardoned
nice.
Nixon.
Pretty
and that's
nice.
A lot of that's a lot of money. You can, you know, multiply that maybe by 5 if you're looking at its worth today.
Yeah,
so you're looking
the
at
value.
Yeah.
Yep.
So at any rate, next thing I hear a voice, Lewis, it was Ed Trautman. He said, okay, you convinced us. We'll work with you. Now it's your turn to do something positive. Why don't you run for Congress? I answered without any hesitation. Ed, I'm trying to practice law. I'm trying to raise a family. And above all, I'm not a politician. I have no political knowledge or experience. I've never held any office of any kind, not even class secretary. Then he said, all the better, Lewis. You will be the unspoiled, fresh voice. At least there will be somebody out there calling out for... And I said, hold it, Ed. I'll do it. I'll tell you what. If you have $10,000 on my desk by tomorrow at 9 a.m., I'll run.
Wow. And so I guess you're stuck. What happened?
Well, the evening ran on and trailed off. We finished our meal. I went to bed, and I never gave it another thought. It was a good ploy. They could never raise another $10,000 during the night. And I was relieved. I was going to raise money. I went to bed like at 10 o'clock, and I was in the office the next morning. I slept well. I was at my desk by 8 o'clock. And there was an envelope on my desk, and it was thick. And I opened it slowly. I said, oh, my God. It was unbelievable.
No way.
$10,000 in checks, all payable to the Lewis Res campaign for Congress.
Wow. What a story. I love it. Well, I can see there's a lot to talk about here. We have the Vietnam War, mandatory criminal sentencing, our prison system, pollution, political corruption. Super interesting. Let's start us off with the Vietnam War.
Well, okay. I'll tell you about the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
The Vietnam War was a product of politics, internal politics in the United States. And the Kennedy administration supported the Diem regime. And the Diem regime were dictatorial, and they ran South Vietnam.
Hmm.
North Vietnam was run by Ho Chi Minh and the Communist Party. The French had been in there. It's a long story with the French. But the bottom line is, it's a matter of fact, it's very, very comparable to Afghanistan. If you want me to compare
similar
it.
Situation.
But we got hooked in there the same way. The first thing, Afghanistan, you've heard this recently. It's been on television. It's the longest war in the history of the United States.
Hmm.
Right? Okay. What about Vietnam?
Yeah.
It was 20 years, Afghanistan. That's what they said, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
How long were we in Vietnam? Do you know?
No.
I'll give you an idea. We were there from November 1955 to April 1975.
Oh.
19 and a half years. So
right
was the second longest war by all, and it only missed by about 6 months. Nobody mm-hmm. talks about that. Okay. What was going on? Well, in Vietnam, there was an internal battle with the Viet Cong, which was the communist military. And in Afghanistan, there was the battle with the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taliban were fighting with the government, trying to take over the government, and did. And the Viet Cong were fighting to try to take over Vietnam, and they did.
Right.
Both countries... Afghanistan and Vietnam had prior invading countries, prior occupying countries.
Mm-hmm.
So before us in Afghanistan, the Russians, and the Russians were had the same place we had. They went into Afghanistan to protect Russia, supposedly from the Fayyadin, which was a part of the Taliban.
Hmm.
There were two different groups, and remember, I was thinking Dan. Rather was he's went out in disgrace. He had some problems, but he made his name being embedded with the Taliban and the Fayyadin in the mountains of Afghanistan when they were shooting American-made rockets against the Russian helicopters.
Wow.
So it was, we got into Vietnam. Well, the French were there.
Mm-hmm.
So the Russians were in Afghanistan. The French were in Vietnam. Same thing. They occupied it. And they were thrown out. They lost Nhien Bien Phu, which was a big fight, a fort in the northern part of the country. And they lost it and they left.
Hmm.
When the French leave, they take out the telephone wires. They take the copper, everything. They're tough. Okay. What else is similar? In Afghanistan, we set up the army, the Afghan army. We put, I don't know how many hundreds of millions or billions of dollars into the army. And then when we left, the army collapsed immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in Vietnam, we set up the South Vietnamese army. And the minute we left, the South Vietnamese army collapsed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
In Afghanistan, we set up a puppet government that was corrupt. The minute we left, that government failed and fell apart. In Vietnam, we set up a puppet government that was corrupt. And the minute we left, that failed. Well, we're pretty close, huh?
We should have learned our lesson.
Okay. The goal in Afghanistan was to capture Osama bin Laden. But he escaped. We had him cornered, and he slipped out. So it failed. And in Vietnam, our goal was to support the Diem regime and at least battle it to a division like Korea with a line in the middle. And we failed there. Okay? So the government collapsed. When the government collapsed in Afghanistan, we couldn't get all our supporters out. Remember, they were running on
their...
And the same thing happened in Vietnam. We had the helicopter on the embassy. We couldn't get them out. And they wound up in concentration camps in North Vietnam. And they wound up being isolated in camps in some of the islands before they could get to the United States.
Horrible.
So our supporters were left stranded in both instances. Okay?
That's horrific.
The only thing that I found was greatly different was that in Afghanistan, I figured we had about 7,000 military deaths. And we had contractors, you know, we had paid professional...
Yeah.
Assassins? No, they're special, like, mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
we
assassins.
Had, there were 8,000 mercenaries killed.
Mm-hmm.
So the total was 15,000 all told. In Vietnam, we lost 58,220 Americans. That's what I was screaming about, that we had to get out. So that gives you a comparison of the two wars. So what do you learn from that? You learn that our government doesn't seem to learn from history.
Nope.
Nobody's reading history.
Keeps repeating itself.
they ought to look at it a little more closely. Okay?
Yeah.
Next subject. It's terrible that we make the same mistakes needlessly.
Yeah, and the loss of lives.
Next thing, you want to talk about sugar?
Let's talk about sugar.
Well, we talked about pollution, and I was trying to remember the list that you had. But
So
I think it was mandatory criminal sentencing.
Next.
But we'll get to sugar. Mandatory criminal sentencing is one of the biggest mistakes that this country has made in the criminal life of the country. First of all, what country do you think has the most prisoners in the world?
Us, United States.
You would think Soviet Union, China, you know?
No, it's us.
United States, how many people in jail in the United States in 2020?
I have no idea, but it's a lot. I'm sure it's a lot.
2.12 million.
Wow.
That's 2,120,000 prisoners in jail.
Wow.
And
that's
a lot
insane.
Of them, huh?
That's crazy.
Well, it's crazy. It's crazy. And it's why? Because a lot of the stuff we make crimes are not crimes in other countries. I'm going to tell you about Weldon Angelos. I'm going to tell you about all the convictions we had. So you can hear them coming on TV every day now about people who were unjustly convicted, who were innocent.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of that because the prosecutors become involved in their political careers more than seeking truth.
Hmm.
So they want to have heads on their belt. to scalps on their belt, if you will, and say, oh, I'm the toughest prosecutor in the county, and I'll be a great judge, and I'll be your congressman, and I'll fight for you. And
what a way.
they forget that their obligation is to justice and to the law and to fairness and not to... not to further their political careers. Yeah. I was in Russia once, and the judge was dressed in Gucci outfit. Oh. She was a member of the Communist Party, and I was watching the trial with a bunch of American judges. We were on a VIP tour. And she says in Russian, "Piratov, I said, "What does that mean?" She said, "Bring in the guilty prisoner. Now we'll have the trial." I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "In Russia, the police do not make mistakes. When they charge somebody, they are guilty."
Wow.
That was from the judge.
Wow.
So I thought that was pretty good. So they're pretty bad. Mm. Anyhow, I'll tell you some more things, okay, about...
Yeah, the prison system.
Well, you want to know, we have the highest prisoner rate per population. So what are the next countries that we're in bed with, our pals, with high prison rates? El Salvador, you like that? Turkey, okay. Mistan, which I don't know where that is. Thailand, Palau, okay. Rwanda and Cuba. Hmm. We're in bed with Cuba. Tell that to all the Hispanics in Miami
that we
have a lot in common with Cuba.
Yeah, what's happening in Cuba right now, half the country is in prison.
Well, that's what it is. We're like that. We beat them. We're then we have what is called stacked sentencing. So that's if you're involved in a crime, they can have three or four sub-crimes in it. And you can be sentenced.
Your time,
So there's a guy by the name of Weldon Angelos. Weldon Angelos was 55 years of age. And he was a music producer. And I've spoken to him. I met him on the phone a number of times. He's a very nice guy. He owned Extravagant Records. And he was caught possessing a handgun, a pistol. Once was in the car, once I think was on his ankle. And he sold $350 of marijuana. Actually, he sold 2 half pounds of marijuana. Mm-hmm. He was set up by an accomplice, a paid informant. He was convicted, and they stacked the sentences. He got 5 years for the first violation. It was all part of three things for selling the marijuana. He got 25 years for the second and 25 years for the third.
Wow.
He had 55 years he got in jail.
And
that was because of mandatory sentencing. They indicted him on 20 charges. And he was really...
there's no getting out of that.
No, and this was a solicited, controlled buy from a person. It was set up by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened was the federal court finally in 2016 reduced his sentence to time already served, I think. And then there were a lot of...
Did he make it out?
No, Trump pardoned him in 2016.
Oh, wow.
Finally. Trump pardoned him in 2020. December 30th or something, just before he left.
Right before.
The night he left office, he pardoned him. But that's a terrible thing, the mandatory sentences. So I think I've covered that pretty carefully and thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of prisoners in the prison system is enormous, by the way. You know anything about the three strike law? I think they had it in California. So three crimes and it's life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one guy stole a loaf of bread because his family was starving, and that was his third crime, and they put him away for life.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's that can happen. Okay, does that tell you a little bit? I went very, very quickly.
And it's a business, too, because most of it is privatized. A lot of the prisons are private.
Not federal prisons, but a lot of state prisons are, and so there's a big, they want to keep them busy.
Exactly.
So
they
the prison system. Prison system donates money to the governor for his campaign.
Right.
So the governor makes sure that their economic interests aren't there. Who's fighting for the prisoners? Nobody.
No one,
So they have a clear road. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pollution. How about pollution?
Oh, boy. Pollution. Okay.
It's a big one.
Pollution. I can tell you this very quickly.
You were telling me something about sugar.
Okay. You want to know about sugar?
Yeah. Especially we're here in Florida. We got all the sugar cane.
Sugar generates phosphates. And also has a conversion factor into carbon monoxide. So it is
horrible.
Nobody likes to talk about the sugar industry. The sugar industry has polluted Lake Okeechobee from the minute they started growing sugar cane there. But they have lobbyists. It's heavily funded. They have lobbyists that really are very, very powerful. They're contaminating Lake Okeechobee. And what happened is, so they passed a law, and they said, well, the new law, they're going to reduce the amount of phosphates, I think, by about 40,000 pounds or something. Well, what happened was the new law was drafted by the sugar industry and presented to the Florida legislature as this great reform. No, I'm not kidding you. And they didn't fight it because they wrote the law. And they wrote the law that they could live with.
Of course.
So they're now what's called self-regulation. It doesn't work.
Gosh.
So what about sugar? Well, sugar. Sugar causes obesity.
Yeah.
It's loaded with fat and calories. It causes heart disease. It causes acne. It damages type 2 diabetics very badly.
Mm-hmm.
In added sugar, you have like this 38% risk of dying if you have sugar regularly. It creates depression. It increases the risk of cancer. It ages the skin, and it causes cellular aging. So when you add sugar, it's fructose, and it reduces leptin. Well, that is what inhibits hunger. So now your hunger, you're stimulated.
Yep, you want to keep eating.
You know, one sugary drink of soda per day can put you over the recommended daily limit for added sugar.
How do you spell that? Leppin? What was that?
Leppin. Yeah, you can look it up.
Yeah.
So that gives you, this is a quickie today.
Yeah, no, I'm learning a lot.
Because you got so much stuff.
There's so much.
What else do you want to know? What's the next subject?
The political corruption.
Oh, boy.
Can't get enough of that,
right?
Oh, boy.
Okay. Well, political corruption. I don't want to damage people's love of the Reagans because everyone loves the Reagans. But Nancy never returned the dresses. She had the dresses from Balenciaga or wherever is one of the famous things, Bali something, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she never returned them. That to me is not nice. That's called stealing.
Yeah.
When you have something that belongs to somebody else and you don't return it, that's violation
stealing.
Of law. Let's talk about, well, you want me to talk about the way they get bribes?
Yeah.
I can tell you.
Yes.
Well, the first big speech maker, I think, was President Bush Sr., the father, after he liberated or we went into Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and we liberated the country. I'm trying to think of the country that they had invaded.
Was it Kuwait?
Kuwait. You're smart. They met,
I got it.
So we liberate Kuwait. We sent our troops. That was how we first got in.
Uh-huh.
So the first thing we did was put back all the gold faucets that they had in their luxury places. We helped them do away. They did away with all the women's rights that we thought we'd improve. Women went back to subjugation. All the criminal system with the crimes, they went back to Shia law, which is they cut off your hand if you steal something.
Yep.
They cut your hand off.
Yep.
They stone women to death. If your woman has an affair with somebody, they stick her in the ground and throw stones at her head until she dies.
What do they do to the guys?
Nice.
That cheat?
Yeah.
Nothing.
So I don't know how I got into it, but...
political corruption.
Yeah, okay. So he made a speech.
Right, he made a speech.
Right. So Mr. President Bush goes and makes a speech. Mm-hmm. What do you think they paid him for a speech, to make one speech? And he didn't write it himself.
I'm sure he didn't.
So yeah. He had a speechwriter, probably paid for by the government, mm-hmm. went on his staff.
So he made how much?
$1 million for
what?
Making a speech. Oh, well, I thought that was good. Ronald Reagan reduced the taxes, the import duties on the Japanese automobiles. Mm-hmm. And in return, they invited him to Tokyo to make a speech. How much did they pay for that? $2 million.
Oh.
That's a nice speech.
Yeah.
and
he
gets
to go to Tokyo.
Hillary Clinton. God love the Clintons. They know how to make a quick dollar. So you can see I'm not a Democrat or a Republican
right,
when it comes to corruption.
They're all corrupt, yeah.
She goes to Wall Street. I think she was getting $600,000 a clip for making speeches around Wall Street.
Wow.
Which they were, you know, figure it out yourself. I don't have to tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
Consulting fees. They consult. I told you about President Ford. Well, mm-hmm. Jerry, pardon me, he's deceased, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but in 1977, he was on the board of Commercial Credit Company, Tesovo Petroleum, Tiger International, Nova Pharmaceutical, Citigroup, and the Pullman Company. That's just some of them that I could find. I just started to dig a little. When he got out, he invested in oil with Marvin Davis, and he made money, a lot of money, without really doing very much. He appeared at the board meetings. What is he going to tell? He's going to tell the oil company how to run the business. He was a name.
Yeah.
By the way, that wasn't his real name anyhow, Jerry Ford.
What was his real name?
Leslie Lynch King Jr.
Wow.
Nobody knows that.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah,
he changed his name.
He changed his name. And by the way, congressmen have to be now 5 years before they get vested retirement.
Hmm.
So they did some changing, and they did some of the things about insider trading, too.
Yes.
Insider trading, Obama passed a law in 2012, April 4th, called the Obama Act, and it supposedly stopped inside trading. It didn't, but supposedly did.
Hmm.
So now, 43 congressmen were recently charged with violating the law.
Oh.
43 of them. But some of them really, like Dianne Feinstein, was shown to be innocent. They had her name. But a lot of them aren't. Tommy Turbeville, a Republican from Alabama, was involved in 130 trades. I mean, these people are sitting on... committees where they have
access to information. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they have it's non-public information.
Yeah.
And they're not supposed to use it.
Mm-mm.
And then they're supposed to report all of this. This is mostly reporting that they get.
Hmm.
They're supposed to report all their trades, and they don't. They say, "Oh, I forgot. I didn't know the law. I'm sorry. It was a clerical error, a mistake by my accountant. I told the lawyer to do it. I don't know. I didn't realize that was the law." So the fine is $200, and it's often waived.
Ain't that nice?
Yeah. Blake Moore from Texas, dozens of stock option trades. It goes on and on. Nancy Pelosi, I think her husband sold off his Pfizer stock or something while she was sitting on. look, I, some of these people are really wonderful Americans. Here's Rand Paul. He was a bio firm, some kind of COVID-19 treatment. He came out with a treatment and he bought the stock, or he traded in the stock. That's not nice. It looks bad.
Yeah.
And when the thing is, when it looks bad, it is bad.
Mm.
And so what else can I tell you? Oh, I'll tell you about some of the recent Democrats. You know Joe Manchin?
Nope.
Joe Manchin, come on, he's on the television all the time. He's
no.
the one that's holding out, the Democrat who won't vote against for the better, live better lives. The big Democratic plan that's pending in front of Congress now, where They're trying to do aid for to help parents send their kids to school, to preschool, and all kinds of stuff. You don't know about that? There's a big thing.
No.
Anyhow, Joe mentioned it, says he's apparently not going to vote for it. Oh, one of the things is that it has provisions for the clean air. He won't vote for the clean air.
Oh, goodness.
Well, I said, why wouldn't Joe mention vote for clean air? He comes from West Virginia.
Coal miner.
Yeah, right. Well,
West Virginia.
Yeah, right. You know, there's a company down there that is worth, I think, about $5 million that paid Joe Manchin. He owns it. The deals in coal, and he got, I'm trying to see the, oh, yeah, here it is. He got $450,000 one year, $521,115 another year, and one year he drew $800,000 from, it's called Enner Systems, E-N-E-R-S-Y-S-T-E-M-S, and he owns it.
Huh.
And, of course, what does that do? It's in the coal mining business.
Yeah.
So you're going to ask him to vote against coal when he owns a coal company?
Yeah, he can't. It's not in his interest.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about Kristen Sinema. You know who she is?
Mm-mm.
Well,
nope.
I've got you tonight. She is a senator from Arizona, and she is refusing to vote for this Make Better America Better thing, because one of the things in there is that the pharmacy industry is now going to have to deal on a wholesale basis with Medicare and Medicaid instead of getting retail prices.
Mm-hmm.
They get retail prices now because they lobbied for that, and they knocked that out of the Kennedy Medicare program, you know, and the Obamacare, the Obamacare program. So she's against that. Well, why would she be against that? In the last 6 months, she got $2 million in her campaign to run for Congress from Gilead, Eli Lilly, Merck, Bristol-Myers, Squibb, Genentech, pharmaceutical research manufacturers.
How is that legal?
Pharmaceutical PACs, political action committees.
How is that legal?
Then she was against. She was against something else about financial reform, and so she got money from Goldman Sachs, the president of Goldman Sachs, Winklevoss Trust, the brothers, cryptocurrency, consumer protection. She's on the Consumer Protection Subcommittee, and she's getting money from these companies that have business before her that are affected by what she does. It appears to me. Now, I'm not certain. I'm just giving you what I think is going on.
Yeah, no.
From what I can sniff out, but it sounds pretty bad.
Yeah, of course. And to me, it's just shocking that nothing's been done, and this has been going on for many years. This isn't new.
Well, when we talk about the pharmaceutical, I'll tell you something. Named drugs, like the ones that are advertised on TV where they point a finger and they say, tell your doctor you want this drug, and if he doesn't get another doctor, you know. Those drugs are 250% higher in the United States than in 32 other countries.
In terms of price.
Yeah, so it's like a car.
Yeah.
Let's say you wanted to buy a Ford in the United States, and the same Ford is made in Canada, okay? The Ford in Canada costs you $30,000. The Ford in the United States, and you're not allowed to have a Canadian Ford, the Ford in the United States costs you $90,000. Or $70,000. That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
It's 2.5 times.
That's awful.
250% more. Okay. You want more? When they leave office, they all write books. What do you think? They get an advance for that book.
Wow.
So even Obama got a big advance on his book. Then his wife wrote a book. She got an advance. Then the Clintons wrote books. Now the Clinton is writing mysteries.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're getting money.
Yeah.
They're getting big advances for that. Loans and mortgages. I'm going to say something I probably, maybe I'm wrong, but I hope not. But my understanding is President Trump's son-in-law, mm-hmm. Jared, had a problem with a building in New York called 666 Fifth Avenue. It's called the Sixers. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful bar on the roof called the Top of the Sixers. And it faced, you could see Central Park from down the street, nice. north of it. At any rate, he got into trouble with that building. He overpaid for it, from what I'm told. And it appears that he was having trouble and they couldn't get financing. And I think it was Qatar withdrew the financing. And suddenly Qatar got blockaded for some reason by the United States Navy on a totally unrelated matter, just happened to be at that time. Oh. And I think the day that they agreed to make the loan was the day that the blockade, or nearly that time, was lifted.
Yeah, it was lifted.
But I think that was just a coincidence probably.
Oh, yeah.
But does that help you a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay, now you're beginning to get the idea.
Oh, definitely.
Okay, here's one. There's a drug called Dulera, D-U-L-E-R-A, okay? Mm-hmm. In the United States, one dose of Dulera is $24. What do you think it is outside the United States?
Probably 50 cents. Yeah.
50 cents.
I was going to say.
You like that? That's the gouging that we're getting. And
that's horrific.
And nobody's doing anything about it. Okay, what else
We're
going on and on. Do you want to know about army sales?
They keep pumping sugar in people because then they'll just use the medication, you know? It's a system.
You want to know about arms sales in the United States? Do we get into that?
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other day.
I'll give you a quickie on the arms sales, a real fasty. I think the United States is the largest producer of armaments in the world for sale, international sale. We sell about 37% of the total global arms. Next behind us is Russia with 20%. So we're really big into global arms. And who are we selling it to?
Everybody.
Well, very interesting. Saudi Arabia is the biggest buyer.
Yeah.
Okay? And you think about it. No wonder we didn't do anything when they chopped up their correspondent from the Washington Post that criticized them, and he wound up going to Turkey and never coming out of their embassy or their consulate. They chopped him into pieces, is something I gather.
Yeah.
It seems. It is alleged. Okay. In terms of billions of dollars, how much do you think we make a year selling or income from sale of arms? I'll give you an idea. $175 billion.
Low.
And our second customer is Australia. And the third customer is South Korea. And the fourth is Japan. So you can look at our relationships with those companies, those countries, and try to see if you can figure out how we treat them and how they treat us and why we're so glad that they're our big customer.
Yeah.
And who is selling to them? Do you know who sells them? Who the biggest suppliers are in the world? Huh?
As far
Lockheed
as guns?
Lockheed Martin. Raytheon, missiles, General Dynamics, ships, submarines, Boeing, Northrop Grumman. They sell helicopters, planes, missiles, drones, tanks, weapons, ammunition. Ammunition was Remington. But Remington went under, so there's a new company doing it, and I think it's in a government plant somewhere in Ohio or out in the Midwest. Okay, and you know about corruption in what these companies do to America in the sales of goods, shoddy goods. You know where that word shoddy comes from?
Mm-mm.
There was a man named Shoddy, and he sold blankets in the Civil War to the Union Army, and the blankets were famous. If it rained, they disintegrated.
Oh.
So they called them shoddy goods. That's where the word shoddy comes from.
Oh.
So they used sand for coffee. They sold horses that were dying.
Mm.
They sold junk for rifles and pistols, crap. And if you try to fire them, sometimes they'd explode. They used brown paper for leather. So it was terrible.
Yeah.
Even Brooks Brothers, you know, they just went under, so I can talk about them a little bit. They sold pants without pockets. They cut the pockets out of the pants to save money. They sold buttonless pajamas and stuff like that, you know, buttonless. They took the buttons off. They didn't take munitions. are a great business, you know, it's the ammunition, because they have an expiration date. And so if, and it can be dangerous because what happens is they lose the potency, and so the bullet or the missile that you're shooting through a tube through the rifle can be stuck in the barrel and not come out, because, and that can be dangerous. It can backfire on you too. Landmines, cluster bombs. I was in the Ordnance Corps. We were charged with removing these, taking apart the bombs and mines and stuff.
That's rough.
But that's another problem. So the munitions expire, so they have to buy more, and they sell them. Also the military branches have a habit of not sharing the ammunition they have. The ammunition is supposed to be all standardized, so that the rifles that the Navy uses are the same caliber that the Army uses and the Air Force. Well, they screwed up by not sharing $70 billion worth of conventional ammunition.
Wow.
And they should be sharing it. Not if someone has extra, you give it to them. So
makes sense.
They're so busy. Anyhow, then you, I don't know if you know about Halliburton. I'm afraid to talk because of the Cheneys. I think Liz Cheney's got some strength in her, and you know, some guts. But her father was the CEO of Halliburton, and they had no bid contracts with the government. They hadn't bid; they just got awarded, and that was, of course, in the Iraq War, 2003. Of course, they it's alleged that they monopolized the Pentagon businesses, but they say they didn't make money, but they subcontracted. So a very clever way of making money and not showing it is to form a subcontracting company and subcontract out a part of the contract where the profits are, and you own a big percentage of that company, and your other company that is public company loses money and says, oh, we lost money on that no bid contract. But they get it out in other ways.
I
so I don't know that happened, but it wouldn't surprise me. Okay, did I give you enough?
Oh, yeah. This is a wealth of information.
I think it's enough for
tonight. There's a lot. Wow, lots of digest here.
I'm played out.
This one, I think people are going to rewatch this one a couple times just to be able to soak everything in. But thank you so much, Lewis, and I can't wait until the next one.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, Miami Memoirs, and be sure to pick up a copy of Lewis Rest's new book on Amazon.